Today is Wednesday, February 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, Antarctica's western ice sheet may be irreversibly melting.
It's very easy to melt them. This happens very fast. But building them back up again takes thousands and thousands of years.
Plus, nearly 1,000 Taiwanese are stranded in China's coronavirus zone. And also ahead, U.S. President Donald Trump pardons a slew of white-collar criminals. These stories and more are next. Our top story today, U.S. President Donald Trump granted clemency Tuesday to a collection of prominent men convicted of corruption-related crimes. These include Rod Blagojevich, a former senator of the state of Illinois, who tried to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat after Obama was elected president. ABC's Cecilia Vega is at the White House with the latest.
Overnight, disgraced former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich released from federal prison in Colorado.
Hello, nice seeing you guys.
Cameras catching up to him before he boarded a flight back home.
You had no inkling at all that this was about to happen?
Not today, no, I did not.
You had no warning?
No warning, no.
Part of President Trump's pardon spree that granted clemency to a who's who of big-name white-collar criminals. The one-time Apprentice contestant served 8 of his 14-year sentence for attempting to sell Barack Obama's former Senate seat. The crime caught on tape.
I mean, I've got this thing, and it's golden. And I'm just not giving it up. Nothing.
Blagojevich overnight defiant.
But I didn't break any laws. I crossed no lines. And this was routine politics, and the people that did it are the ones who broke the laws and the ones who, frankly, should meet and face some accountability.
His wife, Patty, appealing directly to the president on Fox News.
The president's about justice and fairness, and, you know, we hope that he looks at Rod.
And President Trump took notice.
I watched his wife on television. I don't know him very well. I've met him a couple of times.
President Trump bypassing traditional Justice Department pardon procedures, saying he relied on recommendations from friends and associates like personal attorney Rudy Giuliani, whose former New York City Police Commissioner Bernie Kerik, convicted of tax fraud, received a pardon. Same for former San Francisco 49ers owner Eddie DeBartolo Jr., who pleaded guilty to concealing an alleged extortion plot. He co-hosted a pre-inauguration party before President Trump took office. Also pardoned a construction magnate who pleaded guilty to underpaying taxes. He and his family donating more than $200,000 to Republicans and the president's re-election campaign. This as President Trump faces fresh scrutiny for tweeting about ongoing criminal cases, even after his attorney general said the president's tweets make his job, quote, impossible. Now, President Trump insisting he has the right to intervene if he wants to.
I'm allowed to be totally involved. I'm actually, I guess, the chief law enforcement officer of the country.
That was ABC's Cecilia Vega. For more on Trump's actions, we're joined in the studio by VOA's White House correspondent Steve Herman. Welcome to the show, Steve.
My pleasure to be here.
So first, we've seen a bit about the corruption-related offenses, which Trump has now granted clemency to those convicted. But what about the other offenses, the other people who he granted clemency to?
Yes, there were four women who had their sentences commuted or in one case pardoned. And they all had been convicted for long prison terms relating to drug offenses. In one case, a woman had already served 14 years of an 18-year sentence for allowing her apartment to be used for distributing drugs. Another woman had her sentence commuted after spending 12 years in prison for a small role in a marijuana smuggling ring. And these are really pretty similar to the types of sentence commutations that we had seen during the previous administration of Barack Obama. And these are not people who are household names by any means.
Now, all of the people who have been granted clemency in this latest round have some kind of connection to Trump. Obviously, there are perhaps thousands of Americans who are in prison for various offenses who might be up for clemency. What about these people?
We have a total of 13,000 people that are waiting for a response to their clemency requests. These 11, the largest group that Trump has given clemency to at any one point, some of them know him personally, such as the former New York Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick, who is a member of one of Trump's private clubs. Others had someone who was advocating on their behalf, including some members of his own cabinet who were speaking up for them. And then in the case, for example, of these four women, that was a direct or indirect connection with a celebrity, Kim Kardashian West, who's gotten very involved in this issue of prison reform.
Now, everything that Trump has done here is, of course, legal.
Correct.
But it does raise some questions because of the close connections that these people have to him. Can you go into that a bit?
Sure. What we are seeing, of course, are cases that are being brought to Trump's attention. In the case of Blagojevich, it was his wife going on a cable television news channel that the president likes to watch and making appeals to the president through that manner. So there is some argument that for the majority of these 13,000 people who are waiting for their clemency request, they really don't have much hope unless they get a kind of a celebrity sponsor for their case.
Now, in terms of the issue of corruption, which a number of these high-profile people who have now been granted clemency were essentially convicted of, you know, you've reported quite a bit abroad, and obviously the U.S. as a nation often talks about corruption, especially in regards to other countries in the world, and making sure that there is accountability for corruption. What kind of message does this send, that Trump is pardoning people who, you know, were convicted of doing some shady things?
Yes, the president's critics are saying is what we're seeing is the president really intervening in different criminal matters, and this is alarming because these actions could be seen as undermining confidence in the rule of law. But the president's argument is as these people, in the case of Blagojevich, for example, in the state of Illinois, that it was he was targeted for political reasons, and in other cases, that the sentences that were handed out were too strong, and that these people have paid their debt to society, but there is that common thread of a political corruption in a couple of these very high-profile cases.
That was VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman here in the studio. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
My pleasure.
Libya's United Nations-backed government announced it is withdrawing from peace talks slated for next week in Geneva. The pullout came after a barrage of rocket fire hit a port in the capital, Tripoli, the target of a months-long offensive by rebel general Khalifa Haftar to oust the government of national accord. The port strikes were the latest violation of a shaky truce brokered in January by Russia, which supports Haftar, and Turkey, which supports the government. Haftar launched his offensive on Tripoli last April. The UN says the fighting has killed over 1,000 people and displaced some 140,000. Spain's Coast Guard said a rescue plane was looking Wednesday for two boats carrying 53 people that went missing in the Atlantic Ocean between Western Sahara and the Canary Islands, as Spain continued to repatriate other migrants who survived the perilous voyage from Africa's western coast. On Tuesday, two NGOs, Alarm Phone and Walking Borders, said 14 migrants, two of them children, had died off Morocco's coast when their boat sank en route to the Canary Islands. The same day, Spain's Coast Guard rescued another boat in distress that was carrying 25 migrants. On Monday, Spain sent 51 people back to Africa, the third such flight this year. And a patient at a British hospital played the violin while a tumor was removed from the right frontal lobe of her brain. so that surgeons could preserve her ability to play music. The tumor was in 53-year-old Dagmar Turner's right frontal lobe, which is close to the area of the brain that controls the fine movements of the left hand. To prevent any damage to her violin skills, Professor Kimarez Ash Khan, a consultant neurosurgeon at King's College Hospital, came up with a plan to map her brain, open the skull, and then get her to play as they took out the tumor. He said the procedure was a success, removing over 90% of the tumor while retaining full function in her left hand. The coronavirus from China, known as COVID-19, has infected over 75,000 people globally and killed over 2,000 people in China. But in China, it's having other health effects too. HIV patients in the Asian nation risk running out of life-saving drugs because quarantines and lockdowns aimed at containing the coronavirus outbreak mean they cannot replenish vital medicine stocks. That's according to the United Nations AIDS Agency. UNAIDS said it had surveyed more than 1,000 people with HIV in China and found that the outbreak of the COVID-19 is having a major impact on their lives. Nearly a third of the HIV-positive people surveyed by UNAIDS said lockdowns and restrictions on movement in China meant they were at risk of running out of their HIV treatments in the coming days. Of these, almost half said they did not know where to collect their next antiretroviral therapy refill. Continuing our coverage of the coronavirus, hundreds of people began disembarking a quarantined cruise ship off Japan on Wednesday as the death toll from the coronavirus passed 2,000. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy reports.
Fresh air at last. Hundreds of passengers from the virus-hit cruise in Japan were allowed off on Wednesday. Nearly 4,000 people were on board when the ship was quarantined on February 3rd. The lucky ones still had access to sunlight from their balconies. Others were stuck in windowless cabins. The Diamond Princess and the people on it have been at the forefront of media attention for weeks. More than 540 people on board had tested positive for the virus. That's the biggest concentration of infections outside China. Countries are now queuing up to collect their citizens, including the city of Hong Kong, which reported its second death in the territory from the virus on Wednesday. The 70-year-old man is the sixth confirmed death outside the mainland. A Japanese official said it'll take days to get everyone off the ship, and passengers and crew who had shared a room with an infected person would have to stay on. Meanwhile, in China, the center of the outbreak, there was a thread of optimism. New cases fell in the country for a second straight day. And excluding Hubei province, where the outbreak originated, the number of new infections totaled 56 on Tuesday. That's down from a peak of 890 just 2 weeks ago. The death toll, though, continues to climb. It's now past 2,000 people in China. And experts are warning it's still too early to tell if the epidemic has actually been contained.
That was Reuters' Michelle Hennessy. Strained political relations between Taiwan and China's government in Beijing have stranded nearly 1,000 Taiwanese in China's coronavirus outbreak zone. The two sides are bickering over the details of charter flights to take Taiwan citizens home. VOA's Ian Bior has the story with reporting from Ralph Jennings in Taipei, Taiwan.
Liu Ruoyu of Taipei flew to her homeland, China, last month for an overdue family visit and is now literally blocked from leaving her parents' apartment. The Chinese government has shut off entries and exits into their city bordering Wuhan to stop the spread of a deadly coronavirus that originated there. The mother of two can't even go downstairs to use a park in the building yard. Four people in their compound have caught the coronavirus, according to notices posted outside their flat. The 40-year-old owner of a Taipei beauty salon wants to get on a charter flight of the type that has taken Americans, Europeans, and Japanese home from Wuhan surrounding Hubei province, the virus's outbreak's origin. "We're all healthy at the moment," Liu said in an interview Tuesday by social media. "I'm afraid, really afraid, of being infected because the rate of infection is too strong," she said. But Taiwan and China don't get along. China sees self-ruled Taiwan as part of its territory rather than a country. The communist leadership cut off formal dialogue with Taiwan in 2016 after a pro-independence party president took office in Taipei. That strains communications and makes charter flights hard to arrange. For that reason, Liu, her 12 and 14-year-old children, and some 1,000 other Taiwanese citizens have been stranded indefinitely in apartments and hotel rooms in the outbreak zone, unable to meet work or study commitments. It's really horrible, said Liu, who checks the news and her social media groups for updates as soon as she opens her eyes each morning. Liu said, we've gotten to a dead end. I think we've reached a point of desperation. Communication broke down after the only Taiwan-bound charter flight to date left on February 4th with 247 passengers. Three on board were not on a passenger list that Taiwan gave to Chinese authorities, and one tested positive for the virus, the government-backed central news agency in Taipei reported. The Taiwan government's Mainland Affairs Council now wants China to step up quarantine work and agree with Taiwan on the names of people on priority lists for any future return charters, a council media liaison said Friday. Chinese officials have challenged the list. Beijing's Taiwan Affairs Office accused Taiwan in a statement February 12th of using all kinds of excuses to obstruct and delay flights. Under friendlier governments, charter planes could be arranged very quickly, said Yun Sun, East Asia Program Senior Associate at the Stimson Center Research Organization in Washington. Now, she said, each side is using technicalities to blame the other, and it's not always clear which people or agencies are supposed to do the negotiating.
To begin with, the fact that the official communications channel is blocked already makes this very difficult. They don't trust each other, they don't want to work with each other, and they don't want to make the other side look good.
About 100 family members of people stuck in Hubei province protested Friday outside the Mainland Affairs Council headquarters in Taipei. They donned face masks and waved signs that read, I want to return home. Taiwanese contract electrician Chen Qichuang is moored in a Hubei province hotel room 6 hours from Wuhan. He and his wife were seeing her relatives nearby when the city closed down. They pay $23.55 per night, and the hotel places three free meals a day outside their hotel room door.
We
are not sick people, he said in a social media interview Tuesday. We don't have viruses on our bodies. We're normal people. Less politicking, less rhetoric. Receive us back in Taiwan. That would be best.
That was VOA's Ian Bior with reporting from Ralph Jennings in Taipei, Taiwan. Beijing's Taiwan Affairs Office said that authorities have stepped up care for the stranded Taiwanese. You're listening to VOA News.
Hello, everyone! The best of best is still yet to be heard. Don't forget to tune in on Thursday, February the 20th for the Billboard's 10 Best Songs of 2019. You'll get to hear your favorite artist, Billie Eilish, Jonas Brothers,
I'm a sucker for you,
Lizzo. Don't forget to tune in only on The Voice of America.
The weekend is here. That means another chance to tune in to Music Time in Africa. Hello, everybody. I'm Heather Maxwell. I will take you on an exciting journey of music from Algeria to South Africa, from Nigeria to Kenya, and from yesteryear to today. I also have an exclusive interview with Dutch Moroccan group Samira's Blues. Breaking news about who is performing at the American Super Bowl halftime show. And a song of the week that brings plenty of lively discussion about the Grammy Awards. You can't miss this one. Join me this Sunday at 1505 and 20500 Universal Time.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jason Patinkin. The United Kingdom has set out plans to prioritize access for high-skilled workers from around the world in its post-Brexit points-based immigration system, while ending a reliance on, quote, cheap labor from Europe, end quote. The plan for visa applicants to the UK will no longer differentiate between Europeans and non-Europeans. Reuters' Joe Davies reports.
The UK will prioritise access for high-skilled workers from around the world in its post-Brexit immigration system. In plans set out on Wednesday, the government said it wants to put an end to a reliance on, quote, cheap labour from Europe. The new system will assign points for specific skills and qualifications. There'll only be visas for those who have enough points. Home Secretary Priti Patel explains the thinking.
We are no longer going to have a route for low-skilled workers to come to the UK. This will now be a single global system that does not discriminate as to whether or not you've come from the EU or from outside of the EU. This will be a single global system based upon the talents and the skills, a link to the points-based system that you've already highlighted, that you can bring to the United Kingdom.
Some business groups have said that many firms rely on overseas labour and warned there might not be enough domestic workers to tend crops, care for patients and serve food, a deficit that could undermine the world's fifth largest economy.
We will continue to look at the dynamics of the labour market and sectors if there are shortages, labour shortages in key sectors.
Labour's Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott isn't convinced.
They're not paying attention to the effects of these policies on the economy as a whole. And there is some concern by industry and the public sector that these proposals will be detrimental.
The new immigration system will come into force from the 1st of January next year and will treat EU and non-EU citizens the same.
That was Reuters' Joe Davies. A new study finds that human-caused global warming is leading to an irreversible mass melting of the West Antarctic ice sheet, which rests on the seabed and is fringed by floating ice. Zoe Thomas, a research fellow at the University of New South Wales, who was part of an international team of scientists that published the paper on the melting ice in Antarctica, said that ending a reliance on fossil fuels and even working to remove carbon from the atmosphere was the only solution to slow this process.
So with ice sheets, it's very easy to melt them. This happens very fast. But building them back up again takes thousands and thousands of years. So what we're seeing with the West Antarctic ice sheet is that the starting of the melt, once we reach a certain threshold, will continue despite our efforts to stop it. And so that's why it's really pressing and really important to start acting on this the carbon sooner rather than later to try and prevent this irreversible change.
The hottest temperature ever recorded in Antarctica of 18.3 degrees Celsius was taken at a research base on the frozen continent on February 6th. If hotter temperatures continue, they could cause an extreme global sea level rise.
So this sea level rise won't happen within the next year or the next 10 years, but what we will see is a gradual increase in the sea level over tens of hundreds of years. And this will gradually displace people as it goes. We know that this is already happening in small island communities, and this will just continue to happen gradually as more and more houses are being inundated at high tide, then at normal tide, and then even at low tide. So it's something that we really need to start thinking about quite soon.
Thomas said that the only thing that would slow the melting was for economies across the world to begin decarbonizing, meaning switching from fossil fuels like coal, oil, and gas to more sustainable energy sources.
But before we really start thinking of ways to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, the first thing that we need to do is stop putting it in there. So really the only thing that's going to start slowing this down is a decarbonisation of economies, and this has to be worldwide. It can't just be one country. It's got to be everyone working together. And only then, once we commit to this decarbonised future, can then we start thinking about potential options for trying to remove carbon from the atmosphere.
Many advanced economies have pledged to cut carbon emissions to net zero by 2050. However, under President Donald Trump, the United States has withdrawn from most of its commitments on cutting emissions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he will talk about a broad range of topics with leaders in Saudi Arabia and Oman after he wrapped up a three-nation trip to Africa. Pompeo told reporters traveling with him that Iran will be a key topic of discussion. He said the U.S. would be willing to talk with the Tehran government, but said, quote, "They've got to fundamentally change their behavior," end quote. That would include ending its nuclear program, ending support for groups linked to terrorism, and halting the detentions of Iranian Americans and Iranian Europeans. That's it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Have a great evening.